And welcome back, everybody. We are talking with Michel Merl about the Bok saga and the timeline of human prehistory, pretty much, and what the saga says about both the origins of the human race, but also the planet in itself, different types of humans and everything else. It's just a fascinating story. And I thought, before we kind of continue and talk more about the mythological context, what the saga says about various things, where we get the concepts of deities and different mythological, both characters, but also peoples as well, both contained within the northern pantheons, and we can see these mimicked in other parts of the world as well. Before we go into that in more detail, Michel, let me just ask you a couple of questions here that pertains to more of the situational stuff that has happened to Ivar Bok and everything else, and we can try to keep this somewhat short, but do you believe that Ivar Bok was murdered? Is there any way you can just mention, talk to us about that a little bit, what happened with the gentleman from Gua and the way that he was stabbed, you know, back in early 2000s or something like that, right? And then later on, he actually was murdered. What happened to him? And what do you think, why do you think this happened?
Why is always the funny question, but there is an old saying, and that is that you never become prophet in your own country.
That's right. Oh, yeah.
And when you are one person like him, he was quite well known in 1984 because he had been working 15, 16 years presenting 18th century program on the Seven Islands in his ancestors' workplace, talking about the last 250 year of history or the last 300 year of history. And suddenly this character beside that is starting to speak about the time before that, about 1,000 years ago, and moving us back into the pagan time, into heathendom. In 1984, I have been already many years hanging out also in that area in Finland, and the general concept was that 1,000 years ago, nobody lived in Uudenmaa. So that the history book tells, and that research up to that time had shown that there's living nobody there. So because nobody lived there, it can't be true, this story. Then, of course, these people did not have so much interest to listen to the whole story. So, of course, we who had time to do that could follow over the 20 years of story, or actually 27 years before he died yet, he told about this story. So he became kind of a controversial character. And it is also not so easy because you have to base everything on the root sound. Now, the root sound for the Finnish people is kind of unusual in that sense that the Finnish-speaking people regard the root-speaking people as coming from Sweden after 1050, when Finland became part of Sweden in this new Catholic organization of Europe. So, because they speak root, many of these root-speaking people also speak Finnish. They are bilingual, but they speak root. And because the Finnish people in general didn't speak root, they saw them more as foreigner. They saw them more as outsider from their country, who in one period of the history has been occupying Finland. And they even have one name for them, these Finnish people. They call these root-speaking people Hurri. And Hurri are people who are running around with goats. Mm. So before we did much before, when we did not have the oil like we have it today in our fantastic electric system, we were burning lamps based on seal speck oil. So in the Finnish Gulf, on these granite islands where the seals came in the millions to take sunshine, you had one day in the year where these people had the right to club as many seals as they could club, and then cook them and make oil from them. And this oil went into the Aladdin's lamps in the different houses in Finland and Russia after the ice time. Now, the people were bringing this oil lamp in canisters on the back of goats. So they were walking around in Finland and Russia with these liters of oil on this goat. And then they were calling these goats to take them with. They were always saying, hurry, 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 hurry. And then the goats were following them. So these rude people get the hurry name from the fact that they were running around with seal speck oil for the lamps in the houses of all the people in the area of Finland, Russia. No?
All right.
So he was also, because he comes from one root-speaking people, he was also seen a little bit as this kind of intruder who now start to talk about Finnish mythology and mythology and all kind of story from before. So, of course, it can't be true. So he must be a little bit banana. So he become this kind of very double character.
Sure.
For the people who knew him, it was no problem, because we could already, after 1-2 years, understand this whole problem. But the local people becoming kind of a fight over it, because they could not accept that these root-speaking people in the area of Uudenma in Nyland, around Helsinki, were the original inhabitants of that area. Yeah, so that the Finnish-speaking people could not accept that at first. In the meantime, things are slowly changing, so I think many have already been understanding. But we were coming, of course, with stories which are so out. And when you start to talk about under ice time and after ice time and before ice time, for one normal human being who has only been reading a book that are available from the library and have no access to this kind of understanding based on saga and mythology, it become all hocus pocus. It all become hocus pocus stories, and it couldn't be, and blah blah blah. But the majority of the people didn't actually get really into debate on what all his stories were based. So of course he was telling his stories. Eeyore was a character. He could handle the opposition quite well, because he just went on telling his stories. And the more stories he told, the more sense the whole thing was making. So, of course, it becomes like one quite heavy thing, in the sense from how can Finnish people go out and say that the origin of the human being is lying at the North Pole in hell before ice time, when we have a completely different information system on the planet telling us other things.
Sure, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And there the conflict becomes. So you have the traditionalists who are following the book, and you have traditionalists like me and other friends of us who are following also the oral tradition. I mean, I've been to school and I also read these books, and in the end I didn't get any answer from reading all these books. But when you listen to this oral tradition, and you can go around the world with this oral tradition and see how other people in other cultures are also in the past make use of mythological concepts and structure of how their organization of life was. When you know this based on the information system of the Bok Saga, which has the perspective from before ice time, it become much more easy to understand why the Hindus have their mythology with Shiva, and why the Hellas people have the Greek people have their Zeus mythology, and the Roman have their Jupiter mythology, and the Aztec Inca have their Quetzalcoatl mythology, or Maya mythology, or Manco Capac mythology from South America. And you can go in Africa and you see that everywhere mythology is based around characters which we call Gudar and Gudinnor, which are gods and goddesses, where these gods and goddesses are for us abstract. Yeah, but we in the saga is explained that these mythological characters are actually represented by human being on the earth. So, for example, if you have John Schumacher or John Smith and Joe Smith and Henrik Smith and Michelle Smith, and you get like one whole series of people who have always the same function. They create a mythological character for this Smith person, because whether you are Jan Smith, Johan Smith, Gustav Smith, or Henrik Smith doesn't make any difference. When you are doing exactly the same function as your ancestor, to you is related this mythological concept of one deity, of one god or goddess.
Mm-hmm.
But it is coming from the root words Gudar and Gudinnor. Now, if you go into the sound system, Gudar actually already says what it is. Gudar are good. Gudar. Gudar are good. So the gods are good. They are good. Gudar. And Gudinnor, the goddesses, is actually also saying what it is, because it says good, which is good, in is in, and nor means the north in the root language. So good are and good in nor is actually saying what it is. The good in the north and the good are good. Yeah, so it is all talking about good in this Bok saga or Wijnemunen mythology. They talk about that basically from the beginning we are good, because we are based on the information system that is coming from these individual characters who have this role in order that the life wheel of the human being is rolling out over the planet. And they become a concept in the form of one mythological figure, so we don't have to keep track and keep book account of who was king 50 million years before ice time and 49,999,7,000. You know,
yeah.
You get one enormous bureaucracy, which you can replace by one very simple story. And this is basically the meaning of all this different mythology that we have around the planet. They are all based on the mythological concept that is explained in Bok saga from before Einstein.
Well, exactly. It's a good point. It's kind of more the, they say, an image, you know, represents a thousand words, and a mythology represents a million images in that regard. You can share, you can disseminate or you know, inherently within the myth, you can contain a tremendous amount of information. But also what's interesting in this case is that you have the words themselves, you can manage to decode them. They hold information about, let's say,
correct,
the nature of something, the origins, or even the location of something. And it's very, very much,
yes,
kind of in your face in that regard. It's straight,
yes,
in front of your nose, but it can be kind,
yeah,
of,
yeah, it's
tricky
right
to
in front of your nose.
Yeah.
So for me also, it was like a huge, huge surprise, because suddenly, yeah, many, many holes what you have in your understanding become filled in by this kind of concepts that are based on sound, and which we find back in the naming of areas, in the names of mountains and oceans and lakes and islands, and yeah, the difference in people and everything. We have it. Today we live in this fantastic time that we have all access to this kind of thing. We can look in every corner of the world, and we can of course look for the difference, but it might be more interesting to look for the common thing. And there I was of course very surprised when you have one friend who is sitting there and say, excuse me, but I have to tell you one story. It takes 20 years, 2 hours every day. I have been educated in it.
Let me just share that with our audience as well. You've been, that's how long you've known Ior Bok for, that's how long you were, and he shared the, were there any components, as far as you're concerned, to the story that you and your other people, your group there, weren't told? Is there things still left out, or was everything passed on to you guys?
he passed on what he had to pass on in order to give out the stories that support this whole new concept of the meaning of individual sound in the language. What make that it become very easy? You have to learn only the root and the van language. They consist of 29 sounds, and every sound has a meaning. So you only have to put the 29 meaning of these 29 sounds in your brain, and then together with this kind of basic story, you open up all kind of thing what suddenly start to make sense. Yeah, which before are all in the concept of mystic and magic and boo, and I don't know what kind of theories we have today on all kind of concepts. Yeah, because we didn't find the answer on the planet, we are looking for the answer in outer space.
Yeah,
yeah. So we are full of alien stories and I don't know what, you know. But
right.
Yeah, that is different. This story gives the possibility to bring everything purely back to natur, nature.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let me ask you another thing here before we carry on as well. I wanted to people to understand a little bit as well what actually has happened in Finland, and also how popular this story at a certain point and when it has been. There have been a number of TV programs on mainstream Finnish television about this story. There's been more so perhaps about the excavation of the what's known as the temple of Lemminkäinen, and this is basically a hill called Sibusberg, which means mountain. Berg means mountain, and it's about north of Gumbustrand in Sipu in Finland. It's about 30 kilometers east of Helsinki, and this is actually a place where the Bock had an estate there, and actually he inherited this from his parents, correct? And this had been the subject of a tremendously long and outdrawn excavation process with various people coming in and trying to, you know, sort all of this out. And can you just tell us what happened? I mean, I find this story just absolutely fascinating, but also the way when you realize how long it's been going on and the fact that still there are issues here which haven't been able to get any deeper into. And I was kind of sad to see that it seems like the story more or less have been kind of dropped. There were tremendous successes made in the excavation process. There's been, you know, bombings to actually shatter certain things within the cave system to pierce through the stone blocks that have been, you know, placed there at a certain time. What is going on here with this story, and where are we now with the excavations and everything here?
Oh well. Yeah, basically, to make this into some kind of sensible story, you have actually to go back to the beginning and how we came here on the planet and how we spread over the planet. Because there is, otherwise it sounds crazy.
Well, we don't care about crazy here on this program. We talk
we
about
don't
it all.
Care right? about crazy.
No, but is there? I mean, let's just stick on this for a little bit, and then we can definitely go into the origin stories and everything that we talked about. That we're gonna discuss more in detail here. But there is a suggestion here, a theory, and I guess this is contained within the sagas as well, that there is a hall where things have been preserved. You call it a treasure chamber, if you will, but it's a storage of countless of different from a different you know, so-called heathen cultures that have been kept away from protection from the Roman Catholic as you call it information system that came in place as a way of a kind of a time capsule, right? That would be the best way of explaining this.
Yes, you can really say so. Finland, the south part of Finland going over to the middle part of Finland, south part of Finland, going over to Sweden and into Russia and Estonia, is part of one massive granite bedrock structure on that part of the planet. So everything in this whole area of Finland and around the Baltic is granite. And this granite, of course, has been coming into existence in the creation of the Earth. And the creation of this earth has been making one open space under Uudenmaa, in the bedrock. And because the entrance to this open space, which is under Udenma, it make it to be the most logical place for that what is told in this story to exist there, because we know today that the shield of granite, which is covering that part of the planet, is at least 500 kilometers thick. So within an enormous cavity, which within this granite had been coming into existence in the creation of this earth, is an enormous open space, and which has a conical form, like an upside down ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
Or like a point hat, like this kind of hat what the witches are carrying on their head.
A wizard's hat. So is this kind of an entrance to an inner world, or
yes,
inner earth of sorts?
Yes, it is the entrance to what is called, there is at the beginning of this entrance, there is one small temple called Lemminkainen Temple. And Lemminkainen is the Finnish name for the same character that is called Balder in the root language, and also in the Swedish, Norwegian, Danish, German people have heard about Balder.
Oh yeah.
So Balder is he is a mythological figure who is because there have been many Balder. So the Balder, who is like the Allfather, he is like the, in one system, he is the father to all people on the planet before Einstein, in one system. So this Balder, he become appreciated by these Vaan people whose life is based on his activity, which is children making. He become very respected for that. And now the ringlands around the planet before Einstein, they have all kinds of handicraft people who bring up beautiful things to the castle of Rasapuri or Rasapori in the west of Udenma, where the older brother of Balder is living and the oldest sister of Balder is living. And these two, they are king and queen in the family of these people who are living there in Udenma. Now in that castle on the credences are becoming all these gifts, beautiful artifacts that people make in the lifetime of one Balder. So one Balder is becoming Balder. He gets one Bok is becoming Balder when he's 27 years old. And now he has the obligation to replace himself, and they do that in one system. And the system is, I will try to shortly tell it so we don't go out for hours there. But in this system, what we have from before Einstein, we have this human being coming on the planet, and now they are living there in Udenma. And now inside Udenma, the people who live there, who speak root language, we call Aser. So the Aser live in Udenma, in Nuland, and speak root language. And they are creating Vaner, who speak Vaan language, or one language, Vaan, outside of Udenma, in all the rest of the planet. Now this Balder, when he is 27 years old, he is going together with one Swan. She's called one Swan in English. Now S in the root system of the alphabet means the sun, and Van means again one, or this Vaner. So the Swan, the Swan, she's called Jotsen in Finnish. She is a girl who is, to make it short, the most healthy and beauty from all girl from all ringland outside of Udenma. So we have before Einstein some kind of Miss World election or Miss Universe election, where they from every ringland send up the most healthy and beauty. And now from all this ringland, you have all this girl, and now out of them become elected 24, and out of after that 12, and then 7, and then in the end, Balder is choosing that one of which he feel is the most healthy and beauty, and she becomes the swan. And with swan, he is making a minimum of 12 son and 7 daughter. The first son is called Mornbokkenbalder, or Ers. The first son is called Ers, and the first daughter, she is called Maya. Ers and Maya are king and queen in the family. So the oldest brother and the first son and the first daughter, when they are 27, they become king and queen in the family and don't make any children. Only the 12th son of this 12th son and minimum 7 daughter, so she has to make at least 24 children in order to get 12 son and 12 daughter. She probably has to make around 24 children before you reach that number. So now this 7th daughter and this first 11th son, they don't make any children. Only the 12th one, when he becomes 27, he gets again, like his father, the title Balder, because now he has to look for one swan from all this most healthy and beauty from around the planet to make again 12 son and 7 daughter. Now, in that way, you don't get so many people on the planet. So this Balder is not only with swan making 12 son and 7 daughter, he is also making pregnant ladies that we call Disa. So now the family, the papa and the mama, and the 12 son and the 7 daughter, this we call the Et of Piru, or the Piru Et. I don't go in all the explanation now, because then it becomes too long, but we can do that later on. Mm-hmm. Now, so the children of Balder and Swan, of Lemminkainen and Jotsen, they this family is called Piruet. And now he is also making pregnant Disas. This you can call stem mothers. And now with the Disa, he is making a second Et, which is called Rose Et, the Et of Roses. Et is today the crown of the oak tree. We call the Et.
Yeah, and you could also say it's the house of a family, like the family line, right? That's the same.
The family line. Yeah. Yes, correct. Yes, we talk about Et per tavlor and so on.
Yes. Yeah.
So now from this Balder and Disa, we get 8 possibility. So out of that come either a boy or a girl. And when the boy is good to make children, he is getting the title Rabi. And if he is better to be in the information system than to make children, then he is called Nar. And when it's one girl who is good to become mother in the future, then she will be a new Disa. And if she is going in the information system instead of making children, she is called Sienare. So we have Rabi, Nar, Disa, and Sienare, and we have 4 more possibilities that come out, but of them there are not so many, and they are called Tur, Tura, Tur, and Tura. So out of Lemminkainen and or of Balder and Disa, we get Rabi, Nar, Disa, Sienare, Tur, Tura, Tur, and Tura. And they have particular functions in creating all these people in ringlands outside of Udenma. So the Rabi become the Allfather in his own ringland. So Lemminkainen is making with Disa one Rabi, and now he has to make as many Rabi before Einstein as there are ringland around the planet. Now Udenma is an example ringland because it's the first ringland with a diameter of about 250 kilometers. So we can say that the whole rest of this ball in the form of hexagram become divided in small ringlands. You can make around the first ringland 6 ringland, and around them you can again make 12 ringland and 24 and 36, and like this you go down to the equator. So we get a couple of thousand ringland on the planet. So this Balder, he has a big job to make for every ringland outside of Udenma one Rabi, one Nar, and one Sienare, because this Rabi, he become the father figure in his own ringland, And with the support of the information from the masculine and the feminine, the nar and the sienare.
Yeah. So now, just to clarify a little bit, what you're talking about is basically an instruction, or it's not really a creation myth, but it's an instruction detail of how to populate the earth, a division of the earth, and who is to see over that area and territory, a way to kind of expand outward, correct?
Yes, we are leaving out the for the moment the creation story, the whole things, what goes before the human being is there on the planet, because it goes too far. Otherwise, we are dealing with too many subjects at the same time.
Yeah.
So I just want to show this population thing on the planet and how we come to this storehouse of the, or the treasure chamber, the Bok family treasure chambers.
Definitely. Yep.
Which is like one cultural heritage for all people on the planet. But I want to show how it come into existence. So now we have a couple of thousand ringland before ice time around the planet. And from this basic family, who is this pirouette family, this Balder is creating the Ruset with the Disa and the pirouette with the Swan. So now, these people who are from Pirouette and Ruset, they are called Aser and speak root language. But now this Rabi, Nar and Sienere, Tur, Tura, Tur and Tura, they get also educated in Finnish, because they are going outside of Uudenma to the other ringlands, where they are creating people who speak Man language. Yeah?
Yeah, so and now, Asir and Vanir, of course, are the two different peoples, well, two of the three different peoples mentioned in Norse mythology that we talked about before. So
Yes, that's right. So now in the ringlands around, we get around the ringland Uudenma, you get six more ringlands. The closest one there are, of course, still in Finland and on the other side of the Finnish Gulf. So you get around Uudenma, you get Turunma, Hemenma, Kymenma, Eestinma, Latvianma, and Liivinma. So now these six ringlands, there is going one Raabi to the center of the ringland, where there is one Bori, which is one children-making center. So all Bori from before ice time are children-making center, where now this Raabi is making children with the next Ed that is now created in the ringlands outside from Uudenma, and this is called Jarl Ed. And under the Jarl, so the Rabi with Jarl Ed, with a Jarl Ed ladies are making Jarl men and Jarl women. And now below the Jarl, we get the second Ed in the ringland outside of Uudenma, and that's called the Karl Ed. And now this Jarl man is making with Karl Ed woman, Karl man and Karl woman. And we have one more Ed, the third Ed, which is called the Trail Ed. And they are like the 90% of the people living in one ringland. They are this fifth Ed, the Trail Ed, where the Trail Ed lady is choosing one car man to make trail boy and trail girl. So in that time we did not have the marriage system of making children like we have today, mm-hmm. but we were man and woman living together, where the trail boy in that time, before ice time, they did not have the right to make children. Because otherwise you could go on eternally with your amount of ad making, and that would overpopulate the bowl. So they had enough with five ad system, so that in that system, when you was living in a ringland outside of Uudenma, you know that when you are one trail boy or one trail girl, that the trail girl in the future is choosing one car man to make children with.
All right.
And in the middle caste, in the car caste, the car lady is choosing one Jarl man to make children with. And now the Jarl lady is making children with the Rabi, and the Rabi is the son of Balder and Disa, and the father of Balder and Disa is again the previous one doing the same thing, who are like the grandfather, grandmother figure in the family, and they are called Gubbe and Gumma in root. So we have Gubben Balder, Gubben Per, and we have Gumman Ella. So Gubben Per and Gumman Ella make 12 sons and 7 daughters. The first son gets the title Ers, and the first daughter gets the title Maia, and they don't make any children. Only their youngest brother, the 12th son, when he is 27, he is again with one swan, making 12 sons and 7 daughters, but also making pregnant ladies called Disa, who are stem mother. And out of Balder and Disa are coming the Rabi, who become the Allfather in the Ringland for the Jarl, Karl, and Trail people living in that land. So every Trail knew that his grandfather's grandfather was Gubben Per, and every Trail lady knew that her grandfather's grandmother was Gumman Ella. And every Khan knew that his great-grandfather was Gubben Per, and Gumman Ella, and every Jarl knew that his grandfather was Gubben Per and Gumman Ella, and every Rabi knew his father is Balder and Swan. So you have like one family system where we were all related to each other. So before Einstein, we had practically only one family, because we were in one system, all born from the sperm of Balder.
So it's kind of, it mimics and echoes, of course, a lot of the other creation myths that we talk about, whether it's, Adam and Eve or what have you. It's a prototype family kind of thing.
The Bok Saga describes the prototype family with all the grandfather, grandmother, a great-grandfather, great-grandmother figure, father and mother figure. Yeah. So all the mythological character that we have, they are actually an image who are showing the role of these people in the children-making system from before Einstein.
Right.
So they are not real people, but they are like, these people get a mythological title to show what they are doing, what their role is in the whole creation of the human being around the planet from before the Einstein.
Right.
Now, in appreciation of that they are living here on the planet in this beautiful nature from before Einstein, these people, because they have language and hand and finger and they are into all kinds of cultural thing, are making beautiful handicraft, and this beautiful handicraft they are sending up to the castle of Ers and Mai in Udenma. So from all over the world, from all Ringland, the most beautiful artifact created in that period that Balder and Swan are making children, these artifacts which are in the castle, they are removing after the Balder and Swan time from the castle, under the ground, into the treasury of the Bok family. So we all belong to Bok family before Einstein. And they found out this open space existing under the earth, this upside down ice cone, where in the wall they start to, from up to down, there is like a spiral roadway going down. And within the walls, they are making one saal and two chambers for every Balder and Swan from before Einstein. So every generation, the most beautiful handicraft, which is created by the people, is sent up there in one system they call Yehovah. Ye means that you give, Hov means the court, and Ah means the answer. So Yehovah means you give to the court of the Azer. And in this two chamber, they store the artifact that people send up to the castle of Razebori, and then become removed from there when that period of Balder is finished. And now they become stored in this two room where they could present them and show this artifact in the saal. And then starts the next period, and now again they build one saal and two chambers in this wall of this upside down ice cone in the granite there in the north of the world. So slowly, over a million of year time, they are filling up their this storehouse with all these artifacts that relate to the history of the human being.
So it's a huge, it's a museum of sorts. It's a way of preserving things that have been and from their times.
Yes, yes, because in the earth you could keep things, and especially if you make them from material that doesn't rot away. No? So the nature has been giving us also material which you can form and which you can make artifacts from. Like, for example, gold. If you are making one gold object and you never touch it, you only look at it and you put it in one place, you can look at it for million of years.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, when you throw it in the fire and you melt it down, you can make all kinds of other things from them.
Yeah, yeah. So is this an open space that just gets bigger and bigger, or is it something that has to carve out the room and the basic
structure is there because it is created in the creation of the earth. But in the wall of this upside down ice cone, they are hacking out rooms where they store these things. So it goes down in one spiral way into the earth, and there they have been making one enormous work of art, which is basically containing the creation of our ancestors from before Einstein.
Let me just wing this by you because it's very interesting. The granite bedrock in this particular area of the world has been used for other purposes as well. I just find the parallel fascinating here. I watched a documentary a while back about how some of the Finnish nuclear spent fuel repository they've been building on this now for several years of a way of trying to store the nuclear waste,
and yes,
it's called the Unkalo spent nuclear fuel repository, I believe, or just Unkalo for short. Yeah,
Unkalo means spelunken. No?
Yeah,
in Finnish.
I don't know if you've seen the diagrams of this.
I know it. It is a huge thing they make there, and I'm shitting in my pants that they drill so deep that they break into the storehouse of the creation of our ancestors. But I think it is a little bit outside from Woodenmar, so they have to go quite deep in order to actually reach it. So in the beginning when I heard it, I get paranoia, but I think they don't go so deep as this basic creation of Earth has been making for us. No?
Yeah.
So, but indeed, yeah.
It's just the way that it moves as well as a spiral down in this capacity, and it just sounds, when you paint the picture of what it is, the cave and the cavity, their structure there is very similar, and the fact that there's another... wouldn't that be, I just kind of, is would be ironic if we had another similar type of facility even in the same area, but it's one contains artifacts from previous times and one contains nuclear fuel spent, you know.
The irony is enormous.
Yeah
in my opinion it's a joke. Yeah, so it must be a joke, no, that existence is playing on us. If you go out from the idea that Bok Saga has hand and feet, of course it's not so easy to explain it in just a few hours, but when you really go into the story, and also that story is telling, is wanting to prove itself.
Yeah.
So we all understood that, we know from the story, from the saga, that under Einstein they didn't continue. Because already before Einstein, they reached the bottom. Now the bottom of this area is called Unterwelt. Now Unterwelt in root language has two meaning. It is first of all Unterwelt means the wonder world, and second it means the underworld in English. No? So when you translate Unterwelden from root into English, you have two possibilities: the underworld or the wonder world. Yeah. So you can always choose between these two. And for me, I think it is a wonder world that is created there, and nothing of the negative connotations that we have with the underworld.
Yeah, yeah.
So it is a magic which is created by our ancestors before ice time. And of course, I find it quite fitting that is a story about this, about the existence of this has been kept up to today, where we, with pressing a few buttons, can blow up the whole planet in 5011 pieces. And but maybe it is the meaning that when we can see this underwerk that the people from before have been creating, can have something to do with where we are right now in the point of time where we are right now.
Yeah, yeah,
that
yeah.
Maybe we should go for the preservation of the earth and its history and the history of the people that live on it, and not so much concentrate on this kind of atomic blast program for people who have nothing better to do.
Right, right, exactly. Now, let me just ask you more here then about the excavation as well. From 87 to 98, there was extensive attempts to try to get deeper into it, and it was basically multiple different of kind of tablets or discs or whatever you want to call that have been broken or shattered, basically, to try to penetrate deeper into the cavity, deeper into the of getting access to it. Where did this drop off? What was the last achievement that was made, and are there any further digs or attempts going to be made, as far as you know?
Of course we want to. We have been trying very hard, but basically, the entrance to this underground construction is, like you said, at Sibu Beriat, Tupeli Wari in East Uudenma, 30 kilometers west east from Helsinki. In the 1930s, Ior's parents, they get this area because they know that their son in the future has one job to do there, to tell about this story. And the entrance to this temple and storehouse was sealed in that year that the Rusland go over to the Greek Orthodox information system, because in the year 987 that happened, in the year 1008 Sweden is going over to Roman Catholicism, so they know it's only a question of time before they come from the west or the east to take over the information system from either time in hell, from the Azer who still live there. So the Azer, they closed this place when Russia go over to the Greek Orthodox information system in the year 987. And now the entrance to this place is under one at the stupa, the place where we went to die in heathen time. We had a different death in heathen time than we have today.
Mm-hmm.
It is said in the information of Bok Saga that the entrance is under the Etterstupa. Now this entrance, the entrance is a cave that is a natural cave under the Etterstupa, on the side of the Sibu Beriat, the mountain under which the temple is. And now they have been stuffing this cave with kind of a gray mass, which is made out of what we can say is pulverized bedrock, pulverized granite mixed with chalk and I don't know what. And they closed off this whole cave with this material. And then under the Etterstupa, they closed that with a cement-like mass, which the cave is filled up with one big big slab of granite.
How do they do it? Have you thought about how they actually managed to achieve this? Because they're huge stones.
I have seen so many huge stonework on this planet all over I think it has not been really a big problem for them.
Right.
Now, outside of this Etterstupa, they again, between the Sibu Beriat and the Gumbu Beriat, there is the roadway leading down under the Ätterstupa into this cave, where you then eventually come to the corridor that leads to the temple and the storehouse. The entrance before that, they filled up with three huge blocks of rock between this mountain. So we had the information that it is sealed with stone slabs, and then you come to one cave, which is filled up with gray mass, and to go in, you have to take out all this stuff. So they did a really good job sealing off this whole area in the year 987 and plant all kinds of trees there that were not there from origin. So it just becomes another kind of nature construction like you find them in that part of the world. You find many big rocks lying around and all kinds of pine tree and birch tree growing around and between. So they could not find this place when they come up there in the year 1050, when they destroyed.
Did they know that they were looking for something? Did the Christians know that it was there?
Yeah, I think they knew that something like that existed, but they didn't manage to find it.
Yeah, yeah. So you're saying it was a huge opening in the beginning, but then they reformed the landscape around there, so it basically just turned into a short entrance, a small entrance.
Correct. So it's a small entrance, but it's about 5 meters wide, the roadway going down, leading into the cave. So we have only been taking out the material, what has been put there. We have not touched the bedrock. So of course we wanted to get out these big stones because we knew they are made by our ancestors, but when we couldn't get them out, this kind of huge stone, because they weighed I don't know how many tens of thousands of kilo, so you need like huge equipment to start to take that out. Now when you are going to the media and you are informing them that you are in the process of opening one temple from before Einstein, then already they are looking at you, of course, like you are a complete idiot, which I can understand very well. they have not been listening to the whole story. They have only been listening to parts of it. And from that parts, they have been making their mental mindset in such a way that this group of people who is doing that are kind of strange people, and probably they are not really well in their head. So because it was private property, they told us that we can do what we want. So we went for the simple solution, and we get some drilling master to drill holes in these stones and blow them away, so that with bobcats we could lift out this material in this slope leading down into this cave. And the Finnish people could use it under the as a basis for the freeways they built in, or the roads they built in Finland.
Mm-hmm.
So no problem for us, this full of stone outside. But of course it's a pity, because from that you could make like a complete reconstruction of how it has been. But I think we have some picture and we can tell also how it was, so it's not a big problem.
Right.
So we managed to get out all this material between these two mountains and leading into this cave. So we come to that point in the autumn of 1987, because it was told in the Bok saga that that Bok who is living after 1,000 years from when they closed it, which was 987, so 1,000 years later on, it was your Bok who had the right to open the temple. And he, from 1984 to 1987, he had been giving out information purely about the saga. But in the spring of 87, he said, look, there is also this story about the storehouse. So from 24th of July, we have the right to open it. So we get inspiration and think, okay, we get here one chance to also prove this story. So it's not only blah, blah, but it also can show something.
Exactly. I guess that's why also partially I'm attracted to that. I mean, not that the oral tradition and the sagas is interesting in itself and isn't enough, but this is a way that will really kind of settle it in something physical as well, if you know what I mean. And that's why I'm really drawn to this particular aspect of the story. Yeah.
And that is also what kept my interest over all the years, because there are different things that are buried around Finland from before 1248. and before 1050, which with a little bit support of the surrounding, it would be very easy to show this kind of artifacts. And that would make it, of course, much more easy to go out with one story from before Einstein. Our actual opvatting, our actual concept of the world is that we came a couple of million years ago out of Africa.
Yeah.
But when you have now one story that tells that we was already, the Bok Saga says that ice time was 50 million year and paradise time was much larger, much longer than ice time. So I can safely say that according to Bok Saga, we have been more than 100 million year living on the planet. Now, that of course is totally crazy when you say such a thing 1984. It become a little bit less crazy by the 1990s. By the year 2000, we start to find out a little bit more thing about all kind of genetic and this and that and different find what we did in different places, of which there is not really any good explanation, but we leave it a little bit out of the school book.
Out of place artifacts, etc., things millions of years old, you know, there's tons of that.
It can't be, because we are living with this fanatic book writing people who base everything on their out of Africa theory from 2-3 million years ago. Now, in that way, it becomes, of course, in the scientific world also a problem, because when you say before 50 million years, everybody is pointing their finger to their forehead. So, of course, you can understand that you don't get so much support from the surrounding when you are involved in such a project.
Sure, yeah.
So, we just wanted to go on, and now we went on with many ups and downs and obstacles and happenings and crazy stories that happened in the meantime. So that more and more there was like an accent, just because we didn't manage to open it. We also didn't know everything. We knew it was closed with stone slabs and that this cave should appear behind there, and we find this cave behind there, but it is full of material which is kind of difficult to take out because it is soft as long as this whole area has been underwater. But because we start to take out all this or the between these mountains, this whole area, this cave through which you reach to the corridor of this temple has been originally constructed like a water lock. So they could close the whole area by just filling it up with water and take out one plug on the other side of the mountain, what make that the water run out so that people could go into the temple. So when it was not used, they could close it off with a water lock. Now they replaced the water lock with this cement-like mass. Now, as long as it is underwater, when this guy is drilling in there, it's also quite soft. But because we have been opening up with the stones and taking out some of the material there, it comes into contact with open air, and that makes that it solidifies. So it becomes like almost hard, like bedrock. Mm. So you have to really drill a hole in it. And now they have been covering the wall and the ceiling and the floor with some kind of material that make that it is quite easy to take out this material. But the cave has become so big that we have basically been tunneling in there and not been able to take out everything on the sides because of some kind of financial conflict what we get, which made that in the end the support that we had was taken away from us.
That was
already in the beginning of 90s. So then we get a little bit help from different people from Norway who are interested in the project, so we could continue further on. And we did, with ups and downs and breaks in between. But also their resources were not endless. So we came to the situation in 1999 where we were thinking we could continue with this part that we had done in 98 with the Norwegian. And then it happened that Eeyore becomes stabbed by one guy who had kind of lost it.
Yeah.
So it's a guy that we knew, but he had some kind of, what can you call it? some kind of psychotic state where he thought he was doing the world a favor when he was putting a knife in the back of Eeyore, and that made him to be quadriplegic. And from that moment, when we find out that our friend, he could only sit on the floor, smoke his beedi, drink his cup of tea, and smoke his pipe. Wow. For the rest, he needed help for everything, for food, for going to toilet, for going to shower. We find out that when there is such a reaction from the surrounding in relation to this man who is telling this enormous story, we find out that maybe we take it a little bit easy and we see how it goes.
Right.
And actually, that whole period from 1999 up to 2010, Eeyore has been sitting in his apartment on the floor, where he has been continuing to give out more and more detailed information about this story. And we actually have been leaving this project because we would need help to do it. We don't have these people who are interested in it, the financial resources to do it. So we decided we leave it a little bit to the herder. And in the meantime, try to give out more and more info so that we probably get some reaction in the future, by which we will be able to not only tell in a more easy way the whole ins and out of this story, but also come to that conclusive thing that our ancestors really have been leaving something in the history. They have been making an incredible creation, which could maybe even guide us to some kind of endless future, no? Based on their understanding of nature and how all the components of nature and history can make that we can have a nice life on the planet.
Right, right. Well, exactly. I mean, it's very interesting, the excavations on the entrance and the caverns there beyond it. I think it reaches into 50 meters into the hill. And what's interesting as well, although there hasn't been any, I guess, archaeological finds in that regard, it's by far the largest cave ever found in Finland, which says quite a bit in itself, right? Because it's like no one knew it was there before. And then all of a sudden this land that was, you know, in the Bock family, in their possession, shows to have, you know, this kind of complex cave system in it, basically. But what I last heard as well is that due to the situation when he was stabbed, there were financial issues that arose with the people who had been helping them to do, you know, you guys to do the work and everything else. But is it true that the property, that this particular area, was actually bought by someone else? It was forcibly sold or confiscated?
Yeah, it was. This is a good friend of us who is very interested in the story, Juha Javanainen. He has a yoga school. He has the biggest yoga school on the Nordic half of the planet. And he has been, since the end of the 80s, been following this story. So in 1999, after Eeyore was stabbed, everybody was thinking he'll probably die in the next few weeks or months. And there was the issue of unpaid bills in relation to the excavation that we were doing there. So different people, because they thought that probably he is dying, they didn't want to wait anymore for the result or to come to the result of it. They thought it was better to get our debts to them out of the way, although we from the beginning have been saying that everybody, for sure, they get their money that has been put in when we have been coming to one result. No? Of course, when you come to one result, it creates a kind of publicity by which you can also create an income to pay the debts that you had. No? Mm-hmm. But that make that they get cold feet, and it made that all EOS property in the winter, when he was the first winter that he was quadriplegic, and because he is used to stay every winter in India, in Goa, he was always busy there to prepare his 18th century program that he presents in the following summer on the Seven Islands in Helsinki. And because he couldn't walk around there anymore, that part of the job became taken away from him. Yeah. So he becomes like a social case, and the only thing he could do was sit on his carpet or on his mattress, and it made that he had to leave the 18th century and now concentrate 100% on the mythology. So from 99 up to the year 2010, when he became stabbed for the second time, and that was the final one. It was one of his assistants. No, we get friends from India who come to assist him in his situation, so that he could nicely sit down and talk to the guests who were coming about the content of Wainamoinen mythology or the Bok saga. And yeah, for that he needed help. No, all of us had also to do our own thing and try to get money together and blah blah blah. So we couldn't anymore spend all of our time in the story, because you had also to pay your rent and have your things going on.
Sure.
So it made that we arranged for him to have two helpers who get nicely paid by the city of Helsinki to support him in his situation. So over the course of 11 years, there have been different people assisting him in his daily life. And that made that for him it was possible to continue to give out stories about this mythology. And yeah, also come to that point that he found out that actually he has been telling everything what he had to tell. So look into his whole life and his situation at that moment. He kind of had been coming to the conclusion that probably he wouldn't go walking down into Lemminkainen Temple. And so he saw that he didn't have so much role anymore in this story, also because he felt he has been telling everything what he had to tell. So he had basically been fulfilling his obligation to his family. And yeah, then within half a year, it happened that one of the assistants in a psychotic state coming out of some kind of situation decided to put the bread knife into him, and that made that his I always say that his suffering came to an end, you know, because it was quite heavy life for him to be quadriplegic and to sit on your 2-square-meter mattress in your room waiting for tomorrow.
Do you think that was a wish from Eeyore himself? Did he want to pass on? Did he not want to be here anymore?
No. He never asked to be stabbed or murdered.
Of course, yeah.
Or to be quadriplegic. Yeah. It has only been happening. So we leave it that was his order, that was his destiny, and that in that way he become taken out from the life. And now we are left this group of people who he has been telling over a period of 27 years about this mythology. And we feel that we want to do something with it, so that his life has not been for nothing.
Well, of
that
course.
That is my motivation anyway, because I know him this year, or I knew him from 40 years back. You know, we met 1974, 1975 in Pakistan somewhere. And we have been doing a lot of traveling together with friends in different places. And mostly he spent his summer in Finland and the winter in India. And in the winter, he prepared his 18th century program that he presents in the summer. Plus that from 1984, he has the obligation to give out his family saga, which is this 20-year saga where they get told or educated 2 hours every day, and when they miss one day, they get 4 hours the next day. So it was kind of very strict in his family that everybody with the title in his family had to listen to this whole program based on the sound system of the root language.
So let's say then, if we shall begin to round things up a little bit for this time. This is a story, of course, I want to return to and talk more about it. There's just so many components to it. But as a way of wrapping things up a little bit for this time, if the key then potentially to unlock this story in terms of bringing it validity to the rest of the world and having interest here, if that lies in the Lemminkainen Temple, if you will, In regards to Juha Järvinen, do you know if there are any plans on his part? Is the relationship between all of you guys good, or how's that?
Okay. Yeah, I missed that part. You know, the story is so big, so you always lose the clue from the question. But anyway, in 99, in the winter, they auctioned off all his apartment and the land and the house where is the entrance to the temple. So all of it was sold. In order to pay a couple of debt, but our friend Järvinen, he get the possibility to, with one shoebox of a little bit money what he had, to pay for this piece of land where the actual entrance is. So that is the mountain, the Sibu Berriet, Gumbu Berriet entrance area by the Ettestupa. And he managed to save that for us, so that still today we will have the right to continue to dig there or to open up this cave.
Well, that's good.
But also, he has not been in the possibility to do that, because we also feel in the meantime, after listening to hundreds of more stories and looking our history in the whole thing, that this should be not a bunch of funny looking hippie who is opening one temple from before Ice Time, but actually to try to inform people about the existence of this story, so that we get a larger interest under the people, so that it becomes done with some kind of awareness in relation to our ancestors who have been creating this miraculous underworld there, which the nature has been providing us people with, so that we can have access to the history of the human being from the first human beings on the planet, Frey and Freya. There's the whole history of the human being from Frey and Freya, which is of course incredible if you think that today we are left with some kind of 5,000 year in some form written history, and for the rest we have absolutely no concept of how human beings have been living and spreading over this ball. So it must be the outer space cowboys who did it. No? Whereas this story is very down to earth and only talking about nature and the norms of nature that made it possible to have that life in existence like we have it according to the Bok Saga.
Well, it's absolutely a fascinating story, and it's a tremendous amount of material to it, of course, and things involved in it.
It's really unbelievable. I mean, it's for me also. I have to practice a little bit again, but I mean, we can go in one time in all the different segments of this story, and there is many hours more of program if people are interested. So let's see what's happening.
Exactly, definitely, and let's have you back, Michel, and talk more about that. And in the meantime, then, if anything seems, if there are some kind of things that you guys are listening, you guys and gals listening, kind of wrapping your head around a little bit, go over to the website and read some of the introductory kind of basics in the background to it, and begin to put this in context. And I'll give out that website once more. It's torshammer.eu. That's T-O-R-S. Torsh, and then Hammer, HAMMER.EU, Torshammer, and there you'll get more information about your book, the Bok Saga, and a lot of the other things connected to the story as well. So, Michel, is there anything last few words you'd like to leave us with before we wrap things up for this time? And then, of course, we'll have you back in the future and pick this up again.
Yeah, no worries. I mean, I love to do it because, I think I have been listening over a period of more than 26 years. So I think, when you have been listening, you have also something to tell. So, then there are a few of us who can tell, all based on the same information, who have more insight in the different aspects of the story. But I'm happy to do to tell you more about this, the content, as that what I have understood. And if there is interest for it, I really love to do it.
Yeah, definitely. Let's do it. Thank you for your time today, Michel. Really appreciate it. And we'll drop off at this time, and then we'll pick this up again at some point. Thank you.
Beautiful. Thank you.
There are some additional videos of the Bok Saga and the excavation of Lemminkainen, the temple if you YouTube it as well. I recommend doing that if you want to find out more about the saga in the meantime, until we can return to the topic and, of course, try to confirm more about this story. For today, we say thank you for listening. We'll be back on Monday with Michael Schratt to discuss the Black Ops program that has been about developing man-made flying machines that you most likely would call UFOs if you saw them. We're going to talk about who develops these, where the funding comes from, and of course what their mission is. Thank you for listening, for being a member, and my thanks to the crew as well. I hope you have a great weekend wherever you are. Take it easy, but stay strong and keep asking those questions. And we say take care to all our friends and supporters.